Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Came back together and they both went into the clouds.
They don't travel like we think of travel. There's a reason that that disc looked so like it wasn't moving, because it really wasn't moving. She looks at me and she sticks her arm out and she points at that hole with a very strong finger and she goes, "And there's nothing you can do about it." Now, this was 1996 in the spring, and it wasn't until 2006, after I left my hometown and moved to L.A. and worked in the film industry and had weird things happen there, I left L.A. and moved to Sedona, Arizona, which is where I lived before I moved here. But I moved to Sedona, Arizona, and in 2006, I started really going into kind of deep meditations. I was just doing kind of deep meditations. And one day, I was looking at the message, that's what I called it, the message. I was looking at the message, and all of a sudden, one symbol, there's a spiral in it, and at the one spiral, I looked at it, and I suddenly went, wait a minute, this feels like it's related to Chaco Canyon. Now, are you familiar with Chaco Canyon?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I've been to Chaco Canyon a number of times, and have had some very bizarre experiences there, which probably are more in the supernatural realm, but there is probably one of the most unique and complex archaeo-paleo calendars in the world is in Chaco Canyon. It is bizarrely unique. So I don't know if you know anything about how most paleo calendars work, but it's usually based on, the sunrise on the horizon lined up with stones or something like Stonehenge, that kind of thing.
Right.
Or the Bighorn Medicine Wheel, which, seems to track certain stars and the summer solstice and that kind of thing. This calendar that's in Chaco Canyon is bizarre to the extreme in that it was discovered on the summer solstice, rediscovered on the summer solstice by a woman who was there. She was just doing a photographic, art photographic survey of Chaco Canyon, and she hiked up to the top of Fajada Butte and found this structure, and it was basically three stone slabs that are leaning against a rock wall. And they're big slabs, and they're slightly tilted to the side, and there's gaps in between them. Well, she saw those, and it looked, like something man-made. And she looked underneath it, and she just happened to arrive at the perfect, right around noon. And as she went up and looked underneath it, and carved into the wall under these three slabs was a spiral with 19 turns on it, and then the little spiral to the left, upper left, above it. And as she approached, she got there, it was noon, she looked and watched as this dagger of light came down and pierced right through the center of the spiral, and then receded straight back up. Now, if you know anything about doing that with the sun, that's a very mathematically complicated thing to pull off, to make it so that you can consistently make a dagger of light at noon come down and cut through the center of a spiral. That's fairly complex. Well, then she noted, though, that it was the summer solstice. And later, she went back, because she also noticed that there were 19 turns on the spiral. And she immediately said, okay, something's going on here. It's weird. The timing was weird. So they came back. They brought a research team back, and they came back for the autumn equinox. And on the autumn equinox, two daggers of light came down on the autumn equinox on the sides of the spiral.
Wow.
Right? Now, we've already got a summer solstice and an autumn equinox, right?
Right.
Well, then they checked again at the winter solstice, and the dagger came down through the center again, but this time there was a little mark. A little dagger went into the side, you know, the little side spiral. So they started going, okay, something's going here. Came back on the spring equinox, and it was the two daggers on the side with the one little dagger up through the little spiral. So I just wanted to want you to understand the level of sophistication of this calendar already, because that's, you know, if you take variations in the Earth's orbit and all sorts of things, to maintain that level of accuracy over hundreds of years is pretty remarkable. Oh, but it gets better. So I don't know if you know this or not, but the orbit of the moon around the Earth, the orbit itself, not the rotation of the moon, but the orbit itself has a wobble in it, and it's a 10-degree wobble. So it goes 10 degrees or 5 degrees to the south, and then from the center, and then 5 degrees to the north. The wobble does. Well, that creates basically 18.65 year cycle of the moon moving, and it changes where the moon comes up over a period of time on the horizon. Well, it turns out that it's 18.65 years, and there were 19 turns on the spiral. In other words, she had a suspicion. So they actually did on further research and realized that if you go there on the full moon, dagger of light moves across and tells you what year you're in of the cycle, because a dagger of light will go on the turn of the spiral of the year that it is.
Wow. That's
any idea how complex that is?
Yeah, that is so precise.
That's a level of mathematical, people go, oh, they just observed it over a period of time. Yes, but to make a mechanical device that would use the noon position of the moon and the noon position of the sun to mark both equinoxes and both solstices and the 19-year cycle of the moon, all in daggers of light between three slabs leaning against a wall, incredibly sophisticated.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That's
anyway,
so
the little spiral in the message, I went, huh, I just had this weird vibe. So this is 2006. So I started looking up, and it turned out that 2006 was what's called a lunar standstill year. What the lunar standstill is that when the moon is going through this cycle and it reaches, you know, either the farthest north position or the farthest south position, when it reaches the farthest north or farthest south, the farthest north is called a major standstill, and the farthest north is a major standstill, farthest south is a minor standstill. Well, it's a standstill. In other words, there's a period of time there for, you know, over the course of a year, a little more than a year, where the moon appears not to be moving because it's between moving one way and then moving the other way. So it stops and then starts to go back, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So it turned out that 2006 was a lunar standstill year. And so just on a whim, I went, well, wait a minute, that's 18.65 years. So it's been 18.65 years since the moon was in this position and doing this. So I started charting back. I was born on a major standstill year. When the thing happened when I was 9, it was a minor standstill year. When I got the message, it was a minor standstill year. What I realized is they were visiting me on intervals so that I would understand the cycle.
Wow.
They were demonstrating the cycle to me because that was part of the information they were relaying. And there were other things that happened in other standstill periods, but it goes, basically it went, you know, I was born in 68, so the standstill cycle was 68, 69. And it's interesting to note that was a lunar standstill, that was a major standstill year, and 69 was, and two things happened in 1969 of great import. One was, well, at least according to popular opinion, we walked on the moon. That was one thing that happened. The other thing was Woodstock. So there were two major cultural events that happened that year that were of great significance to the people at the time. Well, the 1978 lunar standstill was actually 77-78. What happened in 77? Close Encounters and Star Wars. Two movies that changed the culture. Very rarely do you get movies that literally change the culture. Those two movies did. And it's like, people don't think about the significance of it because your entire life has been in the context of a post-Star Wars world. But I remember the pre-Star Wars world.
Right.
And that was a huge culture-shaking film. I mean, it changed the way people thought. Into my head because they were still communicating. I had the message since 1996, but in 2006, which, by the way, if you 1996 to 2006 sounds like 10 years, right?
Right.
But I got the message in late 1996, so it actually was 9 point, in other words, half of the cycle between a minor, between the 18.65 cycle is from major to major or minor to minor. So from major to minor is half of that. So 9 point, whatever, half of 18.65. So 9.3, whatever it is. But the point is, they were literally making contact at crucial times. So there was a system to follow. There was a sequence to follow. And I've actually since then very carefully and meticulously mapped the cycle all the way back to 1900 and forward as far as 2024. And I will tell you this, everything that happened last summer was right in line. this rhythm predicts. It predicted 9/11.
Really?
It predicted, oh yeah, oh yeah. I at some point, it's too complicated if you can't look at it, but at some point I could sit down with you and take you through this and show you literally how this isn't just how it affected my personal life, but how it affects flows of history. There is a rhythm. The Mayans knew it. The Mayans knew it very clearly, but there is a rhythm. And they were showing me the rhythm, and it's about cycles. But anyway, so what's happened is I go through periods of time where I don't even think about the message, but then I'll have other periods of time where I'll just start having epiphanies about it. Now, going back to what, you know, that whole star field thing that I was in?
Yeah.
So a couple epiphanies that I've had, it's about how they travel. They don't travel like we think of traveling. There's a reason that disc looked so like it wasn't moving, because it really wasn't moving. They find experiential intersections. They travel streams of probability, possibility, and probability. There's an ocean of possibility, and they follow the streams of probability that happen, you know, in the context of that. What they were showing me, the whole thing of the star field, it wasn't stars. Those were intersections. They were showing me how they travel. They were showing me each one of those stars represents an experiential intersection, and they have some kind of, I hate to use the word technology, because that thing, the disc, it's not a ship. It's a piece of technology that's like a room that they can follow streams of probability and find intersections and then have interactions inside of, you know, it's a little hard to explain, but...
No, but you're making sense. It's like mind-blowing. Like, holy cow. You're making sense. It's mind-blowing. This thing is... Everything you're saying makes sense, but that's wild.
So the significance is that, you know, I said they were... Remember I said that the screens were basically arranged in a hexagonal shape,
mm-hmm,
inside the dome. There is a lot of geometry that has to do with equilateral triangles, with hexagons, and with tetrahedrons, which are basically three-dimensional, you know, they're equilateral triangle pyramids. I mean, the geometry goes on and on. But what the conclusion, the only logical conclusion I can come to is that the reason seven of them walked into my room is because I was the eighth. There's a whole sophisticated, if you take, so if I say tetrahedron, you know what a tetrahedron is?
Yeah.
Okay. In theoretical mathematics, a tetrahedron actually projects its own opposite tetrahedron, a second tetrahedron that's opposite, that's interwoven through it. And it's because each side is an equilateral triangle with a center. And then, of course, there are points. And if you take a point and run a line from a point through the center of the tetrahedron out through the center of the adjacent triangle, it will start forming the opposite tetrahedron going the other way, and is the basis of a theoretical mathematical construct called a hypersphere. And the fundamental idea is that every sphere, in other words, every sphere, the planet, Earth, every sphere is actually a hypersphere, which means that this realm that we live on here, that we take for granted, this is our Earth, right? There's a second Earth that's here that is almost like an antimatter opposite of it. There's another realm here based on those mathematics. And wow. There was a guy at one point that was very interested in this. His name was Hoagland. And he said he was very much a proponent of the idea of the Earth being a hypersphere, but all planets, suns, everything being hyperspheres. And so he said at one point, he goes, well, I predict something. He goes, the truth is we have gaseous giants, you know, Saturn and Neptune and Uranus and Jupiter are all gaseous planets, right? Well, if gaseous planets are hyperspheres, then we should see evidence at the poles, at the pole of a gaseous planet, there should be a hexagonal shape around the pole. He predicted that. And when I think it was Voyager, one of them went over the pole of Saturn, it has a hexagonal pole.
Wow.
Go look up photos of the northern, you know, of the axis pole of Saturn, and you'll see it.
It's big. We'll check it out.
And apparently it goes the opposite direction of the rest of the planet. It's rotating in the opposite direction rest of the planet.
Wow.
So the reason I bring that up is that let's go into the numbers for just a second. So seven beings come into my room, right? Well, let's arrange them geometrically. It's four females. Well, that's one tetrahedron that's opposite, right? If you think of it energetically, mm-hmm. It's opposite of the males. The male is a father figure and two children, right?
Right.
With me, that makes a second tetrahedron. So it's a male-female tetrahedron paradigm, which means it's exactly what they were describing. And what that creates is two points, a top and a bottom pole. If you put it on its points, like stand it upright on its points, you'll have a top point and a bottom point, and then you'll have six points around the outside. In other words, it's a hexagon with a central pole through it. And so what I suspect is, and I'm going to be very bold on your podcast and say this, I'm one of them. What it is that I think what they do, I think the way that this works is when they find an experiential intersection, for example, the Earth, right, is a hypersphere, and a hypersphere, by definition, is an experiential intersection between two tetrahedrons. So if it's right that it's a hypersphere, then that means it is a grand intersection. So this is an intersection. This is an experiential intersection. And the way that they explore experiential intersections is they take one of them and have one of them be born as a human or as a whatever. It just happens to be human here. So then, and I've always felt this way too. I'm a tourist, Robin. I've always felt like a tourist. I'm here going, okay, ooh, this is interesting. Look at what these fun monkeys are doing. This is fantastic. Look at all the fun stuff they do. But the thing that they've been trying to do is make sure that I don't get lost in the human experience to the point that I don't remember why I'm here. So I think that's what these communications have been about, is to make sure that I remember where I came from and why I'm here.
That's unbelievable. That's so cool. So I wonder if, and I'm sure that there's going to be more then. There's going to be a lot more to this because you're probably not done learning, you know, what they're trying to tell you.
Oh, but, no.
So you're going to have more of these types of experiences if you haven't already with these things. And geez, that is crazy. That is, I'm just mind blown right now. I'm sitting here, you know, just totally shocked, but it's everything you're saying is like, it makes sense, you know, because I don't know you personally on a personal level, but you know, even my interactions with you in the past and stuff, you are a very unique person, you know, I guess is the best way I would say it. Unique in the most positive way. No, I mean it in the most positive way. You're unique, you know, and I'm drawn to a lot of those kind of people. And so I don't know. It was apparent to me that you're a different kind of person, you know, and what you're saying is kind of tying into that.
Well, and just as a side note, and I appreciate that, but as a side note, I also have a good many other kinds of experiences, and I wouldn't be surprised to find out if part of the reason that I have the kind of experiences that I have is because I'm essentially an intersection. So, in other words, the experiences that, you know, I shared on Ghost Adventures, and the experiences that I had at the old shop, and the experiences that I've had with beings approaching me in a dream. And there are some that are just completely dreams. Do you have a minute for me to tell you one short story?
Please, please.
Oh, okay. So in 1998, the fall of 98, I moved to L.A. to pursue my dream of, you know, working in film. And I'd been there for some time, like, you know, it was through the, because it was fall of 98 that I got there. And then it was sometime in the early 99 that I had this very vivid, very real dream. But I'll have these other kinds that are incredibly vivid. They're very real. I wake up surprised that I am where I am because the dream is so real. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I had a dream with, and my wife at the time was with me in the dream, and we did rebar. Like there'd been, you know, a city there that had just been annihilated.
Yeah.
And there was this building, remnants of a building. It was a two-story building that had you know, the old-fashioned buildings where there was the shop downstairs and then the residence upstairs, you know, but
yeah.
You lived above the shop. It was one of those kind of buildings. And it wasn't very big, you know, it was probably, I don't know, maybe 50 feet wide and 100 feet deep and two stories tall. And maybe not even 100 feet, more like 80. But there was a hole that had been punched through the side of it. So it was like a big hole, like 10 feet in diameter.
Wow.
Like literally someone had shot a rocket or something through the, you know, through the building, toward the front. And I was having this experience. I was very aware that there was something else there. I didn't feel safe at all. And I felt like there was some other being, something else there that I couldn't see, that was very dangerous and threatening to me. And it was almost like I kept getting glimpses out of the corner of my eye. It was just moving very fast, and it kept trying to get behind me. And I don't know if you know this, but there is a long-standing belief about the base of your skull, where your skull meets your spine, that is a supernatural entry point, right? If something's going to possess you, that's where it's going to possess you, which kind of freaked me out in the movie The Matrix, because
yeah.
It was like, that's basically what they were suggesting, is that that's how you entered the Matrix, is they stuck a thing in the back of your skull.
Right.
Well, and I knew that that's what this thing was trying to do. It was trying to get behind me, because it was trying to get access to the base of my skull at the top of my spine. And I went, okay, and I was turning my head, and I was like, you are not doing this. And I turned to my wife and said, let's go in the building. I feel really exposed out here. At least if we're in the building, we can get our back to a wall or something, and then, you know, be able to be more defensive.
Right.
So we go inside, and all that's left of the second floor is a little bit at the back of the building, probably like, I don't know, 12, 15 feet of the second floor is still there, intact, at the back of the floor, but otherwise it's just open. So clearly this thing punched through, whatever it was, punched through the building, and it had basically annihilated the upstairs floor. So, and it was basically just empty with rubble, you know. There was still a roof on it, surprisingly, but it kind of made it look like it was a balcony at the back. And I was in there, and we had our backs to the wall, and then all of a sudden, this woman appeared in the air floating over that little back bit of floor, and she was, like, not quite Kate Moss thin, but she was, you know, kind of skinny, and, like, alabaster pasty white, like cream cheese white.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And she was floating in the air, and she had very short hair, like almost cropped, short, very short, you know, almost like a high and tight kind of haircut. But she was female, and she was naked, and she had red, it was like a cross between red glowing eyes and eyes that were red, but almost like that kind of like watery demon looking eye.
Okay.
So she had very creepy. She was a very creepy looking chick. And she looks at me and she smiles with this menacing smile. She looks down at me and she points to the, so we come in through, let's see, okay, let me get it right. So the way the building was orientated, it was probably orientated sort of southeast. Like the back of the building would have been pointing toward the southeast and the front of it would have been pointing toward the, or the southwest and the southeast, south, let's see, southeast, and the front of the building where we were, where the hole was, would have been like north. Anyway, I'm sure you can figure it out.
Yeah.
And so the back where she was up in the air, and she pointed down at the hole, which would have been pointing essentially west. Actually, that doesn't make sense because, anyway, it doesn't matter. No, I guess it would have been east. She would have been, the hole would have been to the east. Anyway, she looks at me and she sticks her arm out and she points at that hole with a very strong finger and she goes, "And there's nothing you can do about it."
Ugh. Ew.
And I looked out. Yeah, it was like, it was creepy. And that's pretty much how she sounded. And I looked out through the hole where she was pointing and watched the Twin Towers fall. And they even fell in the right order. And just keep in mind, this was in 1999.
Wow. Premonition.
And when I... it was totally premonition. Now, and it's weird because I'd kind of forgotten about the dream until after 9/11 happened. And then I remembered the dream and went, oh my God. And it was exactly right. The South Tower fell first and the North Tower fell second. And it's exactly what happened. And I was like, whoa. And I knew that I was on the island of Manhattan. That's what I figured out. I said, it was flat with the rubble. I was like, this had been New York City. This was mounds of rubble of New York City and, you know, the whole thing. So 2 years ago, I'd done this project for a production company. I built a sort of like a exhibition booth at Sundance for this company. And after Sundance, they decided they wanted that display rebuilt in Manhattan, in Chelsea, for another event. So they flew me out there and I did it again. So that was in February of 2019. Yeah, February in 2019. So I went out to do that and then I had to go back in April and I had to, you know, pull it out. Like the exhibit was over and I had to go pull it out and pack it up. So I just happened to work out when I was there in April that I had one day that I had a big chunk of the day free to go do whatever I wanted. And I was just in Manhattan. So I went, I'll go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art because it is a cool place. I've never been there before. So I'm going to go check it. So I was, you know, took the train up to Central Park and I walked across Central Park to the museum and then went through the museum. And they had a special exhibit going on there. It was Byzantium, artifacts from Byzantium. And so I went in and, like, artifacts from the Near East, but from the Byzantium period. So I went in and I was just like, oh, look around. And I came around a corner and there's this little display with this, like, 8-inch tall carved figurine carved out of alabaster with red gems set in the eyes. And it's female. It's female and it's naked. And I looked at it and I went, well, that's creepy. And I looked down and it was the goddess Ishtar. It was a statue of the goddess Ishtar. And it wasn't until probably like months later that I went, oh my God, I had to go to Manhattan to see that. It was in Manhattan. I literally had to go to the place where the statue of the goddess was. And so I have those experiences. That's just an example that has, again, this is what I told you at the beginning of all this.
this corroboration. I have these things that, you know, I have the thing going on here, and then all of a sudden, well, even I even had one about coming to Salt Lake. Salt Lake, understand, most of my life I went, Salt Lake is the last place in the world I'd ever want to live. Like, I didn't even want to visit here.
I think that's a lot of people out there still today.
Yes. But but it's interesting that I ended up here for a wide range of reasons. And I've lived here longer than I've lived here and in this apartment longer than I've ever lived anywhere else, including growing up. I've lived in this apartment for 13 years. I've never lived in an apartment for 13. I've never lived anywhere for 13 years. I've lived here for 13 years. And you are part of that story, at least to a degree. Anyway, but the point is that I actually had two different visions about coming here years before it happened. So far, everything in those visions have come true. The wife that I had in LA, we ended up getting divorced, but I actually had a very clear dream about that before it happened, warning me that it was going to happen, that the divorce was going to happen. And it was well before any indicators that there were any problems or that there would be a problem. So yes, I have had some, but again, it's not so much negative. Well, it's negative only in the regard that it's, you know, warnings, like letting me know that things are going to happen. The one thing that is a strange consistency to all of this is nothing. Though the two things I'll put out there for you. One is there are no ordinary moments. There's no such thing as an ordinary moment. There's no such thing. If you're bored, you're just not paying attention. there are no ordinary moments. That's one. And two, what I've found is that everything ties into larger rhythms. I don't like the word cycles. I just say rhythms. There are these larger rhythms that run through things.
Run through the current of lives and history and time. Like the earthquake was really I know now that it was clearly a sign that, you know, we were going out of business, because you realize the earthquake was, wasn't that 2020?
I think it was early 2020. Yeah, it was like April or March or something.
But it was before COVID was really picking up steam.
Yes.
In fact, it was in March. And so all this stuff, George Floyd, and I mean, everything that happened last year, all of it, that earthquake was it was a larger scale omen. Because it signaled the end of our business. It signaled, I mean, many things. In fact, when I go back, I realize that internally, that earthquake was when I made the internal decision. It was time, you know, that the business was going to end for a wide range. And then everything that happened in 2020 just made sure it did. Sort of purified that.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's... I will tell you this.
Yeah, go for it.
Do you remember June of 2020? Do you remember the significant events of June of 2020?
You might want to remind me. I'm sure I remember. That was a crazy year. So,
well, it was the whole riot thing was going on, and
yep.
It was really building up steam. You know, there were all the attacks on President Trump. I mean, it was getting intense. And then with the COVID stuff on top of that, I mean, it was getting intense.
Yeah.
When I charted out in 2019, when I charted out, I did a clarified charting of the, based on the, you know, the lunar cycle that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
I did a charting back to 1900, but up to 2024. And so just to help you understand this, to give you a visual, I kind of define it this way. A minor standstill is sort of like, imagine a swell out in the ocean. It's not a wave yet. It's just a swell of water. It doesn't become a wave until it comes into the shore. And as it gets shallower, it becomes a wave, and then it peaks and it crashes, right? So just think of it that way.
Okay.
So a minor standstill is a swell. And as you know, with waves, there are peaks and troughs, right? A trough is the bottom between the waves, you know, the bottom space between the waves, and then you have the peaks, which are the waves themselves. So a swell has you have a swell, and there's a trough in front of it, right? There's a between the waves.
Yeah.
And there's obviously another swell on the other side that becomes a wave and crashes on the shore. So the one that peaks and crashes on the shore, at crests, if you will. So I call it swells, troughs, and peaks, right, or waves. So swell, trough, and a wave. And a wave is a major standstill. So that would have been 1969, would have been a wave, where 1977-78 would have been a swell. And the way I'd explain it is like this. A swell is a potential wave that's moving toward the probability of the potentiality of being a wave that's moving toward the probability of being a wave. The trough in between is the transition from swell to wave, which means it has to change. It's a transformative. The bottom of the trough is a transformative moment when the swell becomes a wave, and then the wave follows through its cycle and it manifests as a wave and it crashes. And that's a major standstill. So the minor standstill, then there's a trough, then there's a major standstill. Then when that wave breaks, it breaks into a trough that then starts the cycle over again. There's now another swell that comes after that. So it goes swell, trough, wave, trough, swell, trough, wave, trough. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So mid-80s, later part of the mid-80s. So that's kind of how the cycle works. Well, just to give you a few examples, remember I said I moved to L.A. in 1998?
Right.
9/11 was in 2001. 2001 was the bottom of a trough. And if you remember, 2001 changed the world. It changed everything.
Yes, it did.
The actual bottom of the trough was in October, but that's very close. And so the Twin Towers and all that, that's September. That's literally like, it was less than a month before the bottom of the trough. And it led to the Patriot Act, and it led to all the Department of Homeland Security, surveillance of American citizens. Like, all this stuff happened because of that. Things that we're dealing with now, right, that are still around. I mean, the Patriot Act's gone, but the Department of Homeland Security is still here. And, the, you know, the NSA and surveillance and all that stuff. So that was an extremely transformative moment. Well, and for me personally as well, because 9/11 is what basically began in a very serious way the end of my Hollywood adventure, because everything closed down. Kind of like this last year, right?
Right.
Everything closed down. Film industry, exactly. Entertainment stuff. Big film projects were shelved. It was the only time living in L.A. that it was so quiet from, you know, the 12th and the 13th. Because it was a no-fly zone, so there were no aircraft, there were no helicopters, nothing. It was quiet, and it was a very weird thing, because, you know, helicopters and airplanes are constant in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a constant thing. So the point is that we just went through, in fact, it ended in, I think the middle of it actually was 2015, 2016, was a swell. It was a minor standstill. And in 2018, we went out of that into a trough cycle. And the bottom of that trough cycle was June of last year. So we went from, but because what's happening is we're going through, you can't, it's like you can make all the plans in the world to build a building, right? But at some point, you have to execute and actually start building the building. In other words, at some point, it ceases to be a plan and starts to be implemented. Something, you know, it starts, construction begins. And you have to do what? In our city, we see it all the time. You have to tear down buildings. You have to, you know, prep the ground. You have to dig things, dig holes in the ground. In other words, you have to destroy to create, right?
Right.
That's a pretty common thing. So if you watch, though, 2020, so much destruction. So much destruction. So many things. Statues getting torn down. You know, because what it tells me is that there's a major transformation going on right now. And it's a lot of things are being ripped asunder, as you and I are both aware. A lot of things are being ripped asunder, and new things are having to come out of everything from COVID to BLM to you name it, right? I mean, it's been insanity.
Understatement, I know.
Since, you know, over 2020 and into this year, it's been insanity, unparalleled. So what's happening now, though, is that we are on our way out of the trough. And what you're seeing is this is exactly trough kind of stuff. And what's going to happen is as the trough comes to an end, which is really next year, is when we pass out of the trough, all of this chaos is going to go away. all this nonsense that, you know, everything, and I won't go into details, but you know what I'm saying. All this insanity is going to go away. It's gonna bleed off. The new paradigm, which, by the way, the next thing we're coming to is a wave, which is about things actually coming to pass, things manifesting. We're going to see all the things that people were focused on. And of course, there's a very funny part to me about all this. There are some things I will talk to you about, but not in recording, if that's fair.
No, totally fair.
But there are things that, if you think about what happened in 2016, which was still inside of this, almost the center of it, actually. 2015, 2016 was the center of this last swell. That set things in motion, and it put paradigms. It made possibilities. We had things happen that were unparalleled, and then the trough came in and ripped it all apart, because in order for it to actually proceed, old structures had to be torn down. They just had to be. Well, and we know what a lot of those old structures are. Some of them are still being torn down, but, you know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, then the end of this trough, really, going into this wave, is really, you know, out of 2022. And then, so 2024 is really the middle of the next wave. And I'll let you just ponder that. I'm very entertained. But anyway, so that, and like I said, if you do this episode and you want to, if you end up with questions, or if people who watch your or listen to your podcast have questions, or you want to do a follow up and answer some questions, I'm happy to do that too.
Cool.
We can also talk about other things, because I have.
Yeah, we've got to get you back for sure. We've got to get you back for sure. We got to do more, because this. I know that you've got more, and it's been such a great conversation. And so I really want to, we got to do more. And actually, for our Instagram page, I'd love to post that painting that you talked about when you went into the being's eye and you did the painting of it, your most recent one. I want to put that up there if you would allow me to, just as part of the show, or maybe just a small snippet of it or something.
Well, what I can do is I, like I said, this is the third time I've tried to do this painting. The first time is probably the one, because that the painting I've been working on is not finished.
Okay.
And it's not quite there yet. But the other one that I did that for me just wasn't quite right, but it still, you know, exemplifies it. I can share that with you, and you can put that on the page.
Would love that. That'd
because
be awesome.
Still, yeah. And if you want, I can also, I'm assuming just out of your own curiosity, you'd probably like to see the message.
Yes.
I can send the message over to you too, so you can see that.
Cool. I'd love to.
Yeah. Well, now you know a whole lot more about me than you did before.
And it just, all it does is make you more interesting than you already were. So there we go.
And just for your audience, you, as you know, you actually were the inspiration for a character in a screenplay that I wrote.
Yep. And I appreciate that. That's awesome. he's sort of a narcissist though, if I remember right.
He's what?
He's sort of a narcissistic character, isn't he?
He's an unpleasant character, but it really wasn't because I thought that about you.
No, I know.
It was that I thought you could play. I thought about you playing the character,
awesome.
And I thought that, you know, you looked enough like the character the way I was imagining him. So I gave him your name in the script.
I love it. I love it.
So, you know how to get a hold of me. And I will send those things over to you. I think the painting may actually be in Instagram, the other one.
Okay.
But I will find a, because you're going to do it through social media, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I definitely have it on my phone. So I just want to send you a good enough file so that it looks decent on.
Cool.
On social media. And then.
Awesome. Well, Raven, it's been, you had another thought?
I was just going to tell you one thing. So this was last week. You will like this. I was here and I was looking out my windows and I was talking to my friend on the phone, and it was daytime and there were kind of clouds to the south, and I looked out and, you know, I mean, I see airplanes come in all the time because I can see the flight path of the airport. But I looked out and I saw two black spheres. And I watched them zip in and out of the clouds, and then one of them went way to the left, and then they came back together, and then they both went into the clouds.
Wow.
And they were like, you know, dull black spheres. And I literally was talking to him and I went, what am I seeing? I said this to him. I go, what am I? I just saw two spheres go into the, fly around and go into the clouds. And they weren't aircraft. Aircraft don't do that.
No, they don't move that way. That's wild. That's cool. And it's weird that there were spheres instead of like disks. You know, you get disks and triangles a lot, but spheres, that's pretty cool.
You get a lot of spheres in Mexico and in South America.
That's right.
Which I thought is interesting. What people report there, you get a lot of spheres, which is interesting.
That is.
So, well, we'll go ahead.
Oh, no, I just said that's really crazy. That's cool. I wish you, too bad you didn't catch it on a photo or anything, but those are, it's the last thing you think of sometimes. You're just like, I'm just taking this in, you know?
Well, it happens so fast. Unless I had already been, you know, had my camera on and was pointing it out the window, there's no way I would have caught it otherwise. So, you know, it happened too fast is my point. But
well, Raven, this has been awesome. This has been so cool. This is I appreciate you doing this because I found it way fascinating. Just all of your, and that's just a small portion of what you've been through, I'm sure. So that was huge. I mean, just the, you know, the message and, you know, the art teacher and that they went to her and just that whole entire thing. I'm going to have to mull it over and just kind of continue thinking about it because it was so just mind blowing for me. But no, I appreciate you coming on and just in explaining it.
I appreciate you inviting me to come and talk and tell the story.
Yeah, no, it's been my pleasure for sure.
And whenever this is up and going, make sure I know about it, and I will share it through any means that I can to help get exposure. Because I like your branding. I love your logo. Your logo is awesome.
Thank you.
But I like your branding and I like your approach. I could see this easily moving from being a podcast into being a video cast.
Yeah.
If not being a show.
Yeah, no, that is probably a plan in the future. So I appreciate you saying it.
Yep. Okay. Well, hey, have a great rest of your evening and a pleasure. And like I said, I'm here. If you have questions or if you want me to come back on, just let me know.
All righty. Thanks, Raven.
Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.